Hit Radio, episode 18, is recorded live. The only hacker public radio show with super cow powers. Moo, baby.
can we hear that once more? But I'd like the moo to be a little bit longer, please.
That was
I'll
good.
Moo you.
That was good.
Hello and welcome back to another exciting episode of Tit Radio. Let's meet our round table of geeks, starting with Klaatu.
Hey, everyone.
Peter 64.
G'day.
Azmuth.
How to do.
And J-Man.
Hello.
Let's jump right into listener feedback. DJI writes in, and this is all he said, the Python web server plus PyParallel and Pi Serial could have some real interesting possibilities. That's all he said. And I wrote back, have any links or more info? And he sends back a bunch of links. And the main one looks like piserial.sourceforge.net/piparallel.html. And there's a bunch of other links. Have you guys looked into this?
A little bit. I don't really know much about this kind of thing, but I think the advantage, and I almost want to say we talked about something like this before, where we were talking about faster downloads or something like that, possibly this being a web server that allows, a Python-based web server that allows, you know, lots and lots of concurrent connections and stuff. That's the only thing I can figure out, but I really have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't even looked at any of the links that he sent.
I mean, I looked at them, but I don't really know. I mean, like, PyParallel literally sends out a web server via the Parallel port. You know, I mean, or not, you know, but is a web server that is accessed via the Parallel port. So maybe it's just as simple as being good for older machines. You know, I don't really know. It might just be an uber geeky kind of, like, just because we can thing. I was trying to equate it to something that we'd mentioned before, but maybe this is just, like, random. Like, hey, look at this, guys. Feedback.
Well, I'll go ahead and put everything into the show notes. And if anybody could, you know, send us a message, you know, to feedback at titradio.info and let us know what exactly it is and how to use it, we'll go ahead and mention it on another show. Because I thought it was referring to the topic that Asmus was talking about with that simple server thing.
Yeah. I think that could be it.
Well, simple server is simple, and that's why I use it, and it's very uncomplicated, which I need.
I wonder how the fact that it goes via the Parallel port, I mean, is that still, I mean, does TCP IP talk to Parallel ports? I didn't even know it could do that. I guess it doesn't really matter in the long run. It's pretty cool, I guess, even though I don't understand it.
Well, we'll check back once we get some more info on it. Any more feedback?
Well, there was the one about the search engine or whatever. I think Peter64's got that.
Yeah, I do. I was just looking for it, but I'm on my Slackware system. And talk amongst yourself, and I'll go and get the laptop.
Now, Klaatu, you're using a new phone today. It's how did you set that up? You got two tuna cans, fishing line.
Yeah.
And
yeah, plugged into the Parallel port.
It doesn't sound that bad.
No? Cool.
Hey, you might want to go to Campbell's soup cans. They work better.
Yeah, they resonate better because of the cheap plastic lining or whatever.
Well, they resonate a little better. They're not quite so bassy.
Oh, yeah, bass is a problem with my voice, too.
It is tonight.
Really? I'm going to hear this. I can't wait to hear my voice.
I thought you were right. Klaatu, you sound exactly like I.
Cool.
Not really.
Oh, darn. Because Art's got that, you know, sexy, Barry White thing going on. Or is it Keith Richards?
Who's Keith Richards? Is that the guy from Kiss?
No, he's like a guy from Rolling Stones, and I just haven't ever heard him, but people tell me he looks and sounds like he's probably dead, but just doesn't know it
okay,
yet.
Okay, yeah, I know who you mean. He's like 70-something years old and still rocking out.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find that email, Peter?
Yeah, just opening it now. This bloke's got this, I think.
Now, is this an email for Tit Radio or for Linux Cranks?
I think he was referring to Linux Cranks, actually. He goes, Clark had mentioned on the previous Linux Cranks episode that he was looking for a new search engine to use other than Google. I've been using a site called alltheweb.com, which uses Yahoo Search, and as we referred to the other day, no one wants to use bloody Yahoo because of that front page you've got to go to. But this one gives a new interface that's much cleaner and simpler like Google. Now, what he's done here, he says here, I think the paranoid cranks should put their money where their mouth are and switch to alltheweb as their search engine for 2 weeks. Now, I've actually started to use this, and guess who this was from? This is from RMS, would you believe?
RMS?
Yes, his name, well, I take it I can say his name, he put it in his email, Richard Montabar Starman, so RMS, so there you go. Anyway, I'm going to take him up on his challenge, and from now until we do the next TID in 2 weeks, exclusively this will be my web page.
Okay, what's the address? All the web?
All the web.
Well, yep. Why use this?
Well, I don't know. He said that I think the paranoid cranks should put their money where their mouth is.
I think because we're always dogging on Google for being Big Brother, so we're not supposed to use alltheweb.com. I'm going to use it. I'm going to test it out.
I'm not.
Why not? Why?
I don't like it.
You haven't even bloody used it yet.
It says Yahoo at the bottom.
Correct. It's a friend for Yahoo. That's what the email said, didn't it?
There's only two search engines I'm going to use. That's Google and Clusty. That's it.
See, I think Clusty is just a front end for other ones, too. Although I could be wrong.
I'm going to give it my test. Peter64, and depending on what the first link says, I'll use it. G'day.
That's a good
Any
point.
Bloody web search that comes up when you type Peter64 and the first word you see is g'day has got to be good. So I'm going to use it.
Hey, and it knows my podcast. I put in the bad apples and it was
there
actually cool.
I might use this forever now. Okay, and I'm now making this my search, my home page. So, RMS, the challenge is on. In actual fact, he's not even talking to me because I'm the only bloody crank that's not paranoid. I'm the one who always says I don't give a shit what people are watching me do.
Well, I don't understand why. Who's watching on Google?
Well, doesn't 330 always go on about it?
The NSA is.
I don't.
Are you here?
I don't log in.
You don't think you log in.
I mean, I don't
When I have
like...
sex, I leave the curtains open. I don't care who sees what I'm doing. That left you speechless, didn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I'm still trying to picture it.
I know.
I'm trying to get that picture out of my mind.
You sound very nice to me.
Yeah, I don't see what there is to be paranoid about. All the web has a lot more ads than Google does.
I don't know about that.
If you type in RMS in both of them.
All right.
The first result with Google, you get like something real from Wikipedia. The first four things you get on it, all the web, is four ads.
Those are pretty easy to filter out visually, though, because I imagine they're always going to be up there. But you're right. I mean, but can't you just download like Firebug and like zap that section or something and script it to do a cron job so that every time you search it eliminates the sponsored links or something? I don't know.
On Clusty there's only one ad.
Oh, well that's a good point. Then,
well, do Vegemite. There's only one ad.
A Vegemite. They're probably not even know what that is. Two ads at the top for Vegemite.
I've only got one and then the next one's Wikipedia. Top one's Vegemite.com and the next one I get Wikipedia.
Well, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try all the web for the next 2 weeks, see what luck I have. I imagine I'll be doing fine because I haven't used Google in almost 3 weeks now, and I haven't wanted for any kind of information.
As long as that start page is nice and clean, that's all I'm really concerned about.
Yeah, that's basically what I want. I mean, I think all the search engines at least far as I can tell so far, I think they've all kind of come up to speed. I type in something that I need to know about Linux or whatever. I type in an error message into Clusty or Google or wherever I'm trying that day. I pretty much get the same. I have the same success. You know, I get the answer in a couple of clicks. That's what I rely on them for.
I don't know if it makes any difference to results. It's obviously got to. You know, when you use google.com/Linux, so all your results are pertinent to Linux, I take it. That's what's supposed to happen.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting then to compare doing that and Google and all the web. I've never actually done that, just to see what happens.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because that is cool. You're right.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've had to really do it. I used to have to do it all the time when I was bloody learning. Well, I'm still learning, obviously, but you know what I mean. What's that other one, Jay Lindsay, you've talked about, and Kajari has mentioned it many times,
probably Dogpile.
Yeah, Dogpile. And what's that do? That's a front end to typically a lot of the search engines, is that right?
Yeah, it's like an aggregation. It searches them all and then combines the results.
You would have to say that that's got to be the best, wouldn't you, without even using it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be willing to try it, although its page is actually coming up really, really badly rendered in Conquer right now that I'm trying it in, but
okay,
I don't much
well,
care for their layout, I don't think.
Is that Dogpile?
Yeah.
I'm not
loving it.
Nah, it's got a Super Bowl bloody 20, what is it, 36 or something ad? So that would turn me off it straight away.
Yeah, after looking at all these, Google looks like the best one.
Just a matter of opinion, sir.
Well, I just love the nice, clean interface.
All the web has a nice, clean interface.
I don't think so.
You know what? And besides that, you can always override that CSS stuff with your own browser's style sheet. Why don't you use your CSS prowess and write your own front end for all the web?
That's too much work. Just to search.
It's for freedom, Monster B. For freedom from the prying eyes of Google.
I still don't understand all this freedom crap you guys are talking about with Google.
Look, 330 told me that Google was spying on me, and beyond that, I don't really think I need to explain myself further.
330 said that his mother's father's brother, his uncle, worked there, or knew someone
right.
who worked there, and they watch you, right?
That's right. Yep.
Because they're going to get very bored watching where I go on the net.
Yeah, that's what I say, Az. If people want to watch what I'm doing on the bloody internet, well, let them go for it. They must have a very sad life.
Yeah, I mean, for the search, I really don't care. But I figure if Google collects, like, how many searches come through its little engine, I don't know. I don't have a problem with not being one of those people supporting Google. They've got all this money for no good reason, and they're kind of a weird company that freaks me out. So I'm just not interested in, like, I don't know, being a part of the Google family, I guess. And let me check my Gmail account right now while I'm talking about it.
Well, I'm going to put Clusty in second place.
Yeah, actually, Clusty is not bad, but all the web is not offending me. I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it a good go.
Have you guys ever sat there typing and wondering why your bloody keyboard's not working, and then you realize you're on the wrong computer?
Yes, I've done that before.
I've definitely added a lot to the wrong IRC channel.
That's easy to do.
Yeah, that's way too easy to do.
Oh, now, back in the day, did you guys ever use Winamp or that XMMS?
In Windows, a long time ago, I remember Winamp.
Then the one for Linux was the XMMS, where it looked the same and it shared the same skins. And
We used to use that all the time. That was the audio player back then.
Well, did you see the project QMMP? I mean, it looks just like it, but it's written in Qt, and it uses, you can use Pulse Audio. Well, it supports Pulse Audio and Jack Audio, and it uses all the same classic themes and skins.
Well, that's cool. I mean, a lot of people still use XMMS, but it's hard to get it now because nobody wants to maintain the GTK1 stack. And, you know, there's Beep Media Player, but a lot of people don't like that for some reason.
My favorite has always been GM Player, but they're not developing that anymore, are they?
I don't think I've ever used it.
No, I don't think they include it anymore in the M Player.
There's a lot of other front ends, and they're just all bloody ugly. And I always like GM Player. And it had some nice skins with it, too.
Yeah, SM Player has a huge following. I mean, a lot of people like that.
Well, Peter, you're using Awesome, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought this player would be pretty nice, you know, because it's lightweight. You know, just something that loads fast. There's nothing fancy about it.
Yeah, I must admit, I don't listen to a lot of stuff on a computer. And when I do, it's typically just a, you know, I might put a podcast on in the background. And honestly, M Player, I don't have playlists and all that. I've never bothered to set any of that sort of stuff up in, like, Amarok or any of them. I'm just usually happy just to start M Player with the file, or occasionally VLC. VLC seems to do just about everything you ever need.
Well, VLC, it'll play a video that I can't seem to get to play in other players. Mostly my other players don't seem to pick up the audio off of the local PBS station here. And some programs, they've got some weird audio encoding on it, and VLC's the only one that'll play it. Of course, when that happens, Peter's the one that gets the brunt of it, because I'll just use VLC and make a Og Theora file out of a woodworking program that he gets from me that he can't play on his pocket PC, but but that's always good for the sprinkler heads.
Yeah. So I've never actually used VLC to transcode video. I have used it when I want to pull audio out of a video, but it's such a versatile application. You could almost just live with it, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's about the first thing I add to any system I set up. But I've taken video direct from my analog to a digital card and taking it off of a VHF's camera or make digital off of VHS tapes, and it works great for that. I found it's pretty nice for converting, especially if you want to go to AUGs. It really works nice there.
Yeah, I remember using VLC on Windows because it was the only way you could stream movies across a network. And in fact, I think that was my first introduction to VLC. I've often wondered why they used the witch's hat as their icon.
No, that's not a witch's hat. That's a traffic cone.
Yeah, well, that's what we call them, witch's hats here in Australia.
you guys really are backwards down there.
Yeah.
Well, they still have active witches in Australia.
That's right.
So how did they come up with that? There must be a story behind that.
Oh, hey, they've got a good story behind that. Should let Jay Lindsay tell you. I queried him with a trivia question, and he come back with a real nice answer for it here the other day. How about that, Jay Lindsay?
Yeah, if you look it up, there's a forum post. Someone said that the student organization that the Video Land thing was part of, some of them came back drunk with traffic cones, and then they started a traffic cone collection, and that's how they came up with the traffic cone icon.
Well, it is a very distinctive icon, and you don't mistake it for anything else on your desktop.
That's true, because a lot of media players just very logically have, you know, like a movie slate or a musical note or something, you know? And they all kind of look the same from the icon.
Like, what the heck's that, you know?
Yeah, traffic cone. You see it, you know, no matter Mac, Windows, Linux, traffic cone. You're like, there it is. That's the program I wanted.
Yeah, of course, I've heard they have quite an impressive collection at VLC of traffic cones. I don't think France has any more on the streets. Well, hey, if you're going to play with VLC, you definitely want to play with AUG also. Maybe you want to go check out playaug.org.
Yeah, that's a good site. It's one of those FSF sub-sites, isn't it?
Yeah, it's from the Freedom Software Foundation. They've kind of have an AUG campaign going. They're not proud. They'll let Microsoft and Apple use it, too.
Look at that. Sorry, Az. All the web. First result, witches.hats/traffic-cones. All the web knows what I'm talking about.
But you're going to alltheweb.au.
Yeah, I'm not stupid.
And as far as playog.org, Monster B, we need to help promote them. How would you like to put their icon on the titradio.info site?
Yeah, we can put that on there. As soon as I do an upgrade to the website, I'll throw it on there.
Yeah, they've got four different icons you can add there, depending yeah. on the size and how fancy you want.
I find it kind of hard to believe that Windows and Apple don't include Ogg Vorbis Codex because of copyright concerns. It just strikes me that it's much more just belligerence on their part. I think typically you hear, oh, there's, you know, possibilities of patent restrictions and stuff like that, but I wonder about that. It seems to me like Ogg Vorbis is pretty well established as being free at this point.
Yeah, I think Windows is just doing it, or Microsoft, just to control your music. Cause they don't want you encoding your collection into Ogg.
Yeah, even your personal stuff that you're doing in your garage bands and your various other music things.
But isn't that what it comes down to? They've spent millions and millions of dollars trying to get people to implement WMA, and Apple has spent millions of dollars on... They use that .mov for movies or whatever it bloody is. What do they use for audio clutter?
QuickTime and AAC is the one that they're kind of pushing right now, but or M4A and M4P. They've got a couple of different ones, actually. They're big into MPEG-4, but they're also big into how they can possibly DRM the format. So it's kind of like, outwardly, they're like, sort of, here's our open source, you know, our open standards compliant stuff, but then behind the scenes, turns out they're inserting all this DRM into it. But yeah, I do think you're right. I think that they're trying to make their own big stamped of approval codecs, like the de facto formats. You know, they want to be the big codec brand on the block for whatever reason.
Well, theoretically, that you can't play WMA files in Linux, can you?
Fine on VLC.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to, are you? You have to use that Win32 codec pack, which is either legal or illegal, depending on who you talk to. As far as I knew, the only Linux distribution you could legally play WMA on was Linspire. Didn't they have that big court case with Microsoft and they lost? Microsoft lost, and part of the deal was that Linspire got to use the WMA codecs.
I didn't know about that. It sounds pretty cool, though.
Yeah, I'm sure if you go and look at the history of it. And they could act in that click-and-run store. There was stuff for sale.
Is that codec even popular?
Oh, shit, yeah. WMA?
Yeah.
Well, obviously MP3 is a hell of a lot more popular because every single device you buy plays bloody MP3. But Windows Media Audio codec is actually a pretty good codec, isn't it? Like, for space and, file size and quality?
It's not bad, I mean, in my experience, I mean, which has been limited, but, I mean, I come across it every now and again. And yeah, quite often it seems that it's pretty well, you know, all the stuff seems pretty good.
And since we're on the topic of media players and codecs, Does, from the chat room, posted a media player called Goggles MM. I'll throw that in the show notes. That looks pretty good. Goggles Music Manager, that's what it's called. Never heard of that one.
No, I hadn't heard of that either.
It looks pretty nice.
It's GPL version 3. That's kind of neat. Yeah, it looks like it could be cool. I might give it a shot sometime.
Do you have a topic, Klaatu?
Yes, I do. And the topic is actually multimedia related as well. It turns out that there's a cool little Perl script if you get the latest, I think as of today, which is February 06, 2010, I think it's the latest Linux Pro magazine. There is a little article in there by Mark Schilly about a Perl script that he wrote for what I call video forensics. I don't know what the technical or if there's a term for it, but where you want to find out information about video files and stuff. And a lot of this stuff you can get kind of like from metadata or whatever, you know, which we've covered before, I think. But some of this is a little bit harder to get and previously I've always done it with VLC. Because if you start up a movie in VLC and you open up the information window in VLC, it gives you all kinds of cool information. But there's a cool little Perl script that this guy wrote that you can download and install. And it's just, it's brilliant. It gives you all the information about a video file just all on one screen in your terminal. It gives you everything from frame size to bit rate to frame rate to the codec that it was, you know, that it's using, just everything you could ever want to know. And it's really, really cool. And I will have...
They finally got him.
Yeah.
I think the mothership just arrived. I should probably type in that we lost him. Just in case he's still talking.
Yeah, he'd be still talking away like Dan when he mutes himself.
That's frustrating when you keep getting disconnected.
Well, he's snowed under anyway.
There he is.
Yes, sorry about that. How much of that came through?
I think you were just about ready to give us the link.
Okay, yes. So I just pasted the link into the IRC channel, and it's just basically an FTP. You can just FTP in the public folder of Linux Magazine and download the Perl script. There's a couple of different dependencies, like other Perl modules that you need, but those are really easily gotten from CPAN. So you just kind of install it, and then you can run it against any video file, and it gives you, like I said, just basically all the information you could ever want from a video file. It's really, really handy.
And there really isn't that much code.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, like I say, there are some dependencies, so maybe there's more code in there. But yeah, it seems pretty simple. I've kind of impressed with Perl lately. I've been downloading various Perl scripts and running them, and just, I don't know, I get really amazed at all the things they're able to do with that thing. And not to pimp my own site, but if you go to slackermedia.info, you can find installation tips on that site. It's called video-meta is the name of the Perl script. So if you do a search for video-meta, you'll get installation tips if you need it.
And speaking of Slacker Media, so how's that going?
That's going really well, actually. I think the text for it is basically pretty much all done. It's just a big, if people don't know, it's a big tutorial on how to set up Linux, really, but I specifically did it on Slackware for multimedia use. And then it also kind of, I'm hoping that it teaches you a little bit about how it all works together and how to get things, you know, kind of actually talking to each other, you know, different music applications, actually interacting with one another, stuff like that. So it needs to be a little bit better organized. It's not terribly well organized right now, but I am working on that, and I'm also working on porting it over to just pure XML and DocBook so that I can make it into a PDF as well as a proper website, or a website book almost. But it's looking really good. There's instructions on all kinds of stuff, like real-time kernel, you know, how to patch a kernel and compile it to be real-time, how to start a DAW, get all your soft synths going within that, how to install, you know, how to custom compile FFmpeg for the greatest flexibility, just all kinds of different stuff.
And I see you have a Lives Slack build on here. That's the one that you put together, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, like everyone and their mother makes a Linux distribution. I figured if I was going to do something and kind of like claim it was sort of a distribution, which Slacker Media isn't, but I like to call it a distribution from text, I figured I should probably do a little bit of work, you know, like actual work. So yeah, I did a Lives Slack build. I did a FreeTalk Slack build and a Handbrake Slack build, and I think another one. So if you are using Slackware and you want a really easy way to install some of these applications that I talk about, you can just FBOPKG or however you want to do it and install those applications. And right now the Lives one is the most current build. It's the patched build that they released fairly recently. So it's the latest and greatest.
Well, obviously, yeah, when I heard that Klaatu made the Slack build for Lives, I was interested to try it out. And I did install it and had no trouble at all installing it, but I didn't really have a play around with it until this morning when I come home. I thought I want to give this Lives a go. it's a little bit different. I've bloody closed all the web pages down now. Thanks. It's a little bit different in that it opens up in this a clip view instead of the traditional timeline view that I've been used to. Now, honestly, I don't really understand the clip view or what their intention was with it. Whether it was supposed to make it easier to use, which is sort of what you would think. It's where you import the clips and you can do stuff to. I wasn't even sure what you could do to them, because I'm quite happy to import clips in the timeline view and then start editing in there. So what I found, I had to import the clips in there, then I had to switch over to the timeline view and start actually doing the editing. The other thing I found was, it's compared to KDEN Live, it's a little bit slower. Well, actually, it's not a little bit slower, it's a fair bit slower. I actually thought my machine had closed down, froze a few times before, I was actually about to bloody drop down to the command line at TTY2 or whatever and kill the bloody program. I thought it had frozen that bad. But I think given time, once I get more familiar with it, and that's half my problem, is just not being quite familiar. I think, I'll enjoy it a lot more. It certainly would function to do what the majority of people want to do, though.
I'm curious, Peter64, so you're running Live on your Slackware system. Did you do a custom compile of anything, like libfiora, or not custom compile of libfiora, but, do you have everything, installed, and then did you custom compile, like, in player and stuff?
No, the only thing I did a custom compile of was with FFmpeg, because I needed the AMR support in that.
Okay.
Live
doesn't use FFmpeg, so
yeah, I was going to say
that wouldn't affect it. Yeah.
Yeah, with Lives, I actually can't remember, Clartu, what dependencies were there, but it actually wasn't very hard to get it running. Well, it doesn't use that MLT framework, does it?
No.
Maybe that's why it's a bit slower.
Quite possibly, that's a good point.
Yeah, just thinking of that. But once again, don't get me wrong either, don't take this as gospel, because really I've only started playing around with it today. It did pop up a message saying I needed to increase the hard disk space for something at one stage, which sounded like it was using the hard disk space as a swap file. But
right,
it only suggested to increase it to 100 meg, and I thought, with 3 gig of RAM, and I wasn't paying any attention to how much RAM I was using. I was more interested in just reading through the tutorials and that at SourceForge and, getting used to the program more than actually doing anything at the moment. The only other problem I had, too, was quickly opening up the bloody README, so, because they don't call it a timeline view, or I'm just trying to get back to... The first view is called a clip view, I think.
Yeah, there's the clip editor, and then there's the multi-track editor.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they call the timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, the multi-track editor. And the other thing, too, which is I need to rectify, is that when you're in the multi, I'm going to call it the timeline view, you cannot preview audio unless you have Pulse Audio or Jack installed, which is a bit of a pain considering it works fine in OpenShot and KDEN Live when you're doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's a little bit surprising, but I don't know anything about this sort of thing. I always just assumed that Jack was required to keep it frame rate, really truly constant frame rate between the audio and the video. But now that you mention it, KDEN Live does that just fine, so good point. Not sure what's going on there.
Well, once again, that's got to be to do with that MLT framework, I reckon, all this.
I'm sure you're right.
What's MLT? Multimedia Linux something or other, is it? I can't remember what it stands for anymore.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Claude, too, is this Slack build going to keep you pretty busy?
Well, actually, it has been lately, because the developer, he released, like, 4 different versions all within, like, 2 months. But really, a Slack build isn't that complex, so it's not like I'm a packager now, I just, when he releases a new version, I'll I'll make the changes as needed, test it, and submit it for an update, and then it'll be updated, and that's pretty much it. The Live one was the most complex one I've done because there was a little patch that needed to be done before it could, you know, before it would build properly. So that was actually the most complex one, but otherwise it's all pretty simple. It's just a shell script.
The only dependency for it is GDK pixbuff, whatever the hell that is.
No, that's the only dependency on top of what comes by default with Blackware anyway.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, if you put it on something else, you never know.
Yeah, right. It was very simple installation. It was out of all the video editors I've played with, it was definitely the easiest to get running. I've tried for bloody days to get KDN Live to run under Slackware.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I don't think I've tried it on Slackware 13. I hope to God that it's a little bit easier because it didn't matter what I did with bloody in 12.1. I couldn't get it to run. I had all the dependencies, everything. It just would crash. All I could ever bring up was a splash screen.
I got farther than that, but I never felt like I was getting all that much from my trouble, you know, because it was never that easy. And then looking at Lives and seeing how easy it was to install and get things up and running, I just kind of switched. You know, I was like, why bother with KDN Live at this point? I mean, maybe when it's easier to install it and when it's a little bit more polished, but for now I'm kind of a Blender editor with Lives kind of on the shelf waiting to be played around with more.
Yeah, I must admit, just, and this is once again only based on the very short time I've played with Lives, I would take KDN Live over Lives purely on the performance base of what I've seen so far. It just happens to be too slow.
But did you mention that it was HD video as well? Because I have not seen performance problems, but I'm not doing HD.
Yeah, well, okay. I was doing a 720p film off a HD camcorder. However, it's the same camcorder that I import video with in both OpenShot. I may not have edited actually high def in OpenShot, but definitely KDN Live.
But again, both of those are using MLT.
Yeah, exactly, yep. So that could be the big one, eh? But once again, it just goes to show you what's out there, that there's something for everybody. And on someone's particular system, you know, it might be faster than KDN Live. You wouldn't know. Snacky's asking me if I've tried it on Arch. And the problem I found with Arch, with any video editing software, is the fact that it'll work today, and then tomorrow I'll do an update, and unfortunately it must be something that the libraries have been updated, and I try to run KDN Live or OpenShot or PDV, and they won't work, and you cannot rely on it. So what I thought, and I got this idea from Slacker Media, was, because I don't update or install a lot of stuff on my Slackware machine, that I'm going to make it my multimedia distribution and just have it for video editing. Because I know with Slackware, if I get something set up to work today, it's going to be working next month.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. I mean, I know about Slackware about being 1994 or whatever I said the other day, but... No, I actually do enjoy Slackware when I'm in the mood for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm typically in the mood for it, but, you know, if I wasn't in the mood for it, the times that I would enjoy it would be when I was setting up a system for a specific purpose, like multimedia or, I don't know, desktop publishing or, I don't know, something, a production, like, must turn this on, must work without issue kind of situation. Whereas all the other ones, I don't know, I view them more as, like, distributions to play around on, you know? I mean, and it kind of helps me almost divide the two from each other, you know? So I can play around on my Fedora box, and if something breaks because of something stupid I did or because something a little bit too cutting-edge that they did, it doesn't really matter. Whereas on Slackware, I just don't do stupid stuff on it, and I know they're not going to do anything stupid on it, so it works.
Yeah, exactly, yep.
Plus, I like this packaging system, the package manager.
In Slackware?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started to play. I'd never really delved into it. But once you start looking at it, it's a very good package manager, actually.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, the only thing, like you've mentioned when you've talked about on the bad apples, is you're the actual manager. Whereas you manage the dependencies, where you're going to get them from, whether you're going to pull the ones from SVN down and compile them, or whether you're going to go to the Slack builds and grab them, whatever. And you know exactly what's going into your system.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. With Arch, I have a tendency when I get bored to quickly peruse AUR and have a quick look and say, oh, yeah, that looks like I'll have a look at that, and I install it. And then I go on to the next thing, and next upgrade, I find out I've got like 2.5 gig of updates waiting for me because I've got everything installed in the kitchen sink. And that never happens in Slackware.
Yeah, I mean, not unless you, like, switch over to current and sit there and update and upgrade, you know, all every day or something.
Yeah, well, that's something I definitely wouldn't do with Slackware.
Yeah, see, I mean, I do on sometimes I'll do that, but not on my real Slackware machine.
Yeah, even with Slackware current, it's very stable compared to some other distributions.
Yeah, that's true, typically.
Well, let's move on to J-Man. What do you got for us?
I just had a quick mention of a podcast. It's called The Changelog Show. Their website is thechangelog.com, but for some reason I don't think the feed over there has just the podcast in it. So if you go over to github.com/explore, that RSS feed has just the episodes in it. And the show's basically about open source development, different technologies that are in that area, you know. Last show they discussed things like connecting into MongoDB with Clojure, jQuery validation, the JavaScript implementation of Flash called Gordon, different development topics like that. It's a real geeky podcast, so you'd have to be into that sort of thing.
That sounds pretty cool. Is it like a GitHub, it's the GitHub podcast then, or is it just hosted on GitHub?
I'm not sure about the connection there.
Okay.
They've had a guest on before from GitHub.
Okay.
But I'm not sure how they're related to that. But their feed is on github.com/explore, so I assume there is some connection.
Yeah.
I mean, the player is right in that page.
Cool. I'm going to have to add that to my MashPotter con. In fact, I'm doing that right now.
Did you set a link, Clato? I posted in there that it was just referring back to that the multimedia codecs for Windows and that. Linspire got the Windows Media 10 codecs, the Microsoft True Type fonts, and about $20 million. This goes back to when they used to be called Lindos, and Microsoft sued them for the Lindos name.
Yeah.
You know, back when Kevin Carmody or whatever his name was the CEO of it all. So you wonder what happened if they got the rights to all that, what happened to it all. Does Linspire still exist?
No. I think there's a lot of questions about what happened to all the stuff that Linspire either acquired or had. It seems to be a big drama. It seems to be a source of drama for the Linspire people.
Didn't Xandros buy them?
Yeah, exactly. They got bought up. And then there were accusations that some of the people were running off with Linspire money or something, or the sales of the company or something. I don't know. It's a big mess.
Yeah, I remember some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, weren't they trying to sell that click and run store to other distributions too?
I think they open sourced it or something and let other distributions have it, I think. Or maybe Ubuntu bought it from them. I don't really recall.
CNR.com looks like it's still, oh yeah, you can go there and buy stuff. Someone's still got it.
I just searched for Linspire on all the web, and it says to please refer to Google.
Ah, bullshit. You're full of it. I might buy some codex while I'm over here from a Slackware box.
That'd be a waste of money.
Was this all CNR was, really? It's just a website where you could click on things to install?
Yeah, well, and don't get, this is my old memory, but Click and Run, when they sold Linspire, I think, I always thought the Carmody bloke kept the Click and Run side separate, And that was a totally different business that he was going to try to sell to some of the other distributions.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I kind of vaguely recall stuff about that, like interviews with him on shows like 2 years ago or so.
Well, are we ready for the command of the week?
We are ready for the command of the week.
All right, Klaatu, start us off.
All right, my command of the week this week is, it's an SSH flag, and we all know SSH-X, right, to forward your the X session to the screen that you're actually looking at. There is an SSH-Y, which forwards X, but as a trusted connection, so that basically it's supposed to be, from what I've heard, and I haven't actually done the research to verify it, but it's supposed to be a little bit light, you know, quicker to send the information, because you don't have a whole bunch of security verification going back and forth. It assumes, you know, after you SSH over, give your password, or you have your SSH key or whatever, however you're doing it, it says, okay, this is a trusted connection, and it doesn't worry so much about the, verifying the security settings or whatever. So it's supposed to be a little bit easier on the bandwidth, I guess. So that's my command of the week, SSH-Y, and then whatever server you're SSHing into.
I never used the dash X. What can you actually do with that? I mean, what kind of apps are you launching?
You can launch anything. Like if I've got a server or a computer across the room right now, I could SSH-X over into it, and then I could in that terminal, I could launch Kwrite, and the Kwrite window would open up on my screen. Or I could launch XMMS, or just whatever, really.
Yeah, I typically use forwarding an X session when I'm working on the Myth box because I don't have a monitor on it. Sometimes I want to run the GUI Myth TV setup, so you just run SSH space dash X IP address :0, isn't it, to get it to come over and display on your particular desktop. I used to use it a lot. Even to run Conqueror from the Myth box, I used to display it so I could move lots of video files around before I got, started using SSHFS and mounting drives and stuff like that. I don't use it as much as I used to.
Well, that's pretty neat. What is there anything special you have to set up on the other machine?
No, nothing.
You have to have X installed on the other machine.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Well, actually, I guess you don't, really.
Oh. So you don't even need X running?
I'm trying to think now, because you don't, because the X that it's using is your X server, so you wouldn't need X on the remote machine. I don't know if I've ever tried it. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't. The only machine I've ever set up without X is the Asterisk box. All my other machines have X on them.
Well, I could try it later on my free BSD box. I don't even have X installed, so I wouldn't have any X apps.
Well, you could install one easily enough. I mean,
But it's going to pull down the dependencies, right? It's going to pull down all of X.
Couldn't you just download the source of, like, XPDF or something and just install that?
We could search on all the web to see if you do need X installed or not.
I'll search on Clusty and see. I'll probably get better results. I don't know what it is about that all the web. I just don't like it.
I don't like the name.
I hate the name.
I don't like the look of it, but I do like that it doesn't look like Yahoo's front page. So that's...
And I hate
Clusty's
the colors.
Pretty attractive. Yeah, the colors are really horrible. But I'm telling you, MonsterV, if you're going to do CSS, this is the kind of thing you're going to have to start doing. Modifying the pages on the browser side. That's the power of a web browser. If you're not going to take advantage of that, why don't you just use links or something?
But I don't think I would have to, customize a web page just to use all the web when I don't like it to begin with.
Well, you'll learn to like it after you've gone to all that trouble to customize it.
I'll just use Clusty and be done with it. Or Google. I don't have a problem with Google. So, matter of fact, I'm going to search for my social security number right now. Well, that was a very interesting command, Klaatu. I'm going to have to try it later. I'm interested to see what it looks like. Is there any lag? Or just
yes.
There's a little bit.
There might be. Yeah, it depends on what kind of application you are trying to use.
Actually, I don't think I'm going to try it. Because I can't think of a reason why I would need it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I use every day, but especially at one of my new jobs, I use Emacs a lot. And I mean, you'd think, okay, Emacs, you can run that without X, but there's some customizations and stuff that they've done to, not customizations, but, you know, their .emacs file really, really takes advantage of a lot of the X features. And so we run it with X, but we run it off of the development server. So, you know, it's just the best way to do it. And we use the SSH-Y to minimize the lag time, actually.
Well, it is pretty neat. It's good to know in case I do need it. At least I know it's there.
Yeah, it's nice.
And I'm sure somebody listening to this is probably thinking it's pretty neat. So hopefully somebody can get some use out of it. All right, let's move on to Azmuth.
Okay. Well, for anybody that's using Awesome out there, I know you've messed up your configure file while you're learning to get around in it. But there's a quick and dirty way to test a configure file before you actually load it up and try to run it, and that's with the Awesome -c and your file name, and followed up with a -k, and it'll go through and it'll test out the configure file, and if it has a bad line, which is easy to do in Lua files, but the syntax is a little weird sometimes, and it'll give you the line number where it fails, and it'll try to tell you exactly what failed in it. But it makes it awful easy to go back through and find where you messed up your configuration. And you can do all this before you lose your present configuration and get run back to a default somewhere.
Good on you. That's about 2 weeks too late, Az. You could have told me that one before.
Well, I did, but you weren't watching an IRC.
Yeah, no, I did. And trust me, I've used it too. Yeah.
Well, you know what a time it is to get used to the Lua configurator or Lua syntax. This with popping out the line number where you screwed up, it just makes it so much easier.
Yeah, it is, because it's bloody too easy to stuff it up, isn't it? Just the comma in the wrong spot.
Well, but after you screw it up and find where you screwed it up, well, all of a sudden it starts clicking what you got to do in that syntax to keep it right.
Yeah.
It was just short and sweet. Go ahead.
Is anyone running a distribution that has screen able to split screen vertically by default?
If you run screen in Terminator, you can split the thing, can't you?
Yeah, but that's Terminator. I mean, I could split screen in console too, I'm sure, but I'm talking about just plain vanilla screen making a new split quickly anywhere, or do you have to patch it? Because I've read that some distributions patch it and allow the vertical functionality, and plain vanilla does not. I'm just curious what distributions those are. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a clue. I'm just happy to be able to get back into my screen session. If I can do that, I'm a happy man.
Well, you can set that up in screens. You can set that up in screens configuration if you want to do a vertical split when you start it. You can put a lot of stuff in the screen. The .screenrc file.
I don't think in the plain vanilla one, Az. You could be right, and I could be totally wrong. But I was researching it, and it looked like you needed a patch to get the vertical screen split function.
Well, you may have to go ahead and open a program in your ScreenRC and then split it. But I'm sure it'll work in the ScreenRC file.
Interesting. I'll look into it.
It's worth a try anyway.
Yeah.
And whenever I open screen, I always open it with programs, so you know, it's not a big deal there.
Maybe even easier just to install a DBTM and use that inside of screen rather than patch screen itself.
That's a good point. Okay, I didn't mean to sidetrack us or anything. I was just curious.
How in the heck did we get from Awesome to screen?
I have no idea. I just was curious about screen. My fault. I didn't mean to sidetrack us.
Well, speaking
of
screen.
Hey, they're both awesome programs with screens.
There you go.
On the last episode of Linux and Ham Shack, Russ talked about screen at the end for like 10, 15 minutes. It was pretty good. Did you guys hear that?
I haven't heard my podcasts for this week yet. but I'll probably listen to them tomorrow. So.
Yeah, they're doing a great job over there.
Yeah, they are. That's a really good show. Even though, like, a lot of it I don't understand in terms of, like, the radio stuff, it really is a cool show.
Yeah, but they're like us. They can't stay on topic, and they may start with radios, but they're
Exactly, most of the time. Yeah.
Well, it's good to see Dave Yates is back, too. He put
yeah, I was really
out.
Happy. Yeah.
Yeah, I was missing all the road noise.
Well, we have airplane noises tonight.
Hey, does that make us late?
It does. All right. Awesome command, Azimuth. Let's move on to J-Man.
Yeah, I was going to mention it's another scheduler like Cron, but at is you would more likely use it if you were just going to do something once rather than every day. And the time specification, you can use actual, like, real words to specify this rather than going into the cron configuration. Like, you can say at now plus 3 hours do this, or at 3 p.m. tomorrow, something like that. But you got to start the at service, of course, at D, just like cron D. And you got commands like at Q and at RM, which look up jobs and delete jobs. So yeah, it's pretty simple to get used to.
And that's cool. I could definitely use that one because I'm always getting something to do, and then I'll sit down or I'll just keep working, and then the time just flies by. And if I could, like, set up an at to just do something like echo, you know, hey, you've got an appointment right now, that would be great.
Could you set up a cron job to start the at Damon, J-Man?
That
no. was a joke.
That's like running screen within screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, anybody that's ever SSH'd into a screen session within a screen session running on your local machine, you'll know that screen gets very confused when you start sending it commands because it don't know which one is supposed to get it.
Yeah.
You know how I say tea time and you blokes wonder what I'm talking about and I had to explain it as dinner? Did you realize that you can set up the at command to run at either midnight, noon, or tea time? So
no,
I'm not the only
me.
Person who says it. No, look
yeah,
at the
name. That's 4 p.m., right?
No, it's 6 o'clock. Do you have tea?
According to the man page, it's 4 p.m., Peter.
Who what dickhead wrote this bloody program? Where's bloody tea at 4 in the afternoon?
A German. Thomas Kronisch.
That's the English.
That might be what time you light the barbie, but you don't check the meat on until 6.
Did everybody get their command in?
Yeah.
No.
Shut up, Peter.
All right, Peter, what do you got for us?
Nah, cut this. I'm going to peel potatoes. Bye.
That was nah. Just like, is there still a show going on?
This show has been one big outtake.
But I tell you now, you think they're shit, and when you sit down and cut out bits, they come out okay.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Well,
to such a degree that I actually listen to them again, you know? Like, even though I was on the thing, I still listen and get more out of it, I think. So go ahead. What's your
opinion? Yeah. Yeah, you got to go back and say, I can't believe we said that.
I know, yeah.
Just chuck in a good theme song at the end, and it'll be a good show. My commit, okay, just quickly. Going back on the awesome, this isn't specific to awesome, but when xprop is my command, and what that obviously is short for is the X properties, it's a utility to display for displaying window and font properties on the X server. What I've used this for is when you want applications to start on specific desktops or workspaces or tabs, or depending what Windows manager you're using, you often have to find out the actual window name. And without that, you struggle to get it to pop over to the right desktop. And just quickly, it'll be xprop, then pipe, grep, space, dash I space class, and that will bring up the WM class string, whatever that is, and it'll actually give you the Windows name, which quite well, it seems to be, but probably not typical. It is the actual command that starts it, like conversations. Windows name is conversation with a capital K. And unless you use that name, you cannot send that to a workspace when it starts. But I'm sure it can be used for a lot more than that.
Okay, so you type it in and then your cursor becomes...
Yeah, and click on the window that you want to find out what the name is.
Okay, I see.
And then when you like Fluxbox and Awesome both, you need to put that name in when you're setting up your configuration files. And I'd imagine it's exactly the same in KDE and shit like that as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. When you've been around as long as me, Cloud 2, you know the right people to ask, because Jay Lindsay told me how to find that out.
Could you pop that in the chat room for everyone?
Yeah, I was just looking. Jay Lindsay, how do you cut and paste? Thanks, Cloud 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm on awesome version 2 at the moment, and once again, I'm hitting all these keystrokes that don't do anything. Snacky saying XClip, which I take it as similar.
No, that's for copying and pasting.
Oh, is that what he's talking about? I don't have it.
Well, I think it's time to wrap this mess up. What do you think?
I hate to hear it end, but yeah, I think you're right. I think we're at the end.
We're getting warmed up. Come on.
Yeah, good all night.
We're hitting our stride now.
I think I should pimp some upcoming events. That's coming
yeah,
up
if you have some.
Month or two, yeah. PyCon coming up February 17th through 25th in Atlanta, Georgia. Scale 8X February 19th through the 21st in Los Angeles, California. Flourish March 19th and 20th in Chicago. Texas Linux Fest April 10th in Austin, Texas. And Linux Fest Northwest April 24th and 25th in Bellingham, Washington. That's a lot of stuff coming up.
Yeah, there is.
And our email address is feedback@titradio.info. And check out the show notes at titradio.info. And it's time for Terry F's Song of the Week. It's going to be a country song, Peter.
Ah, thanks, Taylor. This will be the first one I'll listen to then. No, just joking.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks.
Okay, see you, everyone. Good night.
Ta-da.
Good night.
Hey, this is Terry from the Juiced Penguin. On the last Tit Radio, there was a request by Peter64 for some country music. Well, I rummaged around and I found some. This is a song by Hank Grant. It's called Stuck Again. And Peter64, this one's yours.
Of rain when suddenly I got this pain to get my four-wheel drive out in the mud. Now me and Tim had dipped a few of that fermented stuff called brew, and I said, Tim, get out and lock those hubs. There we were in the middle of the night, slinging mud left and right, drinking beer and having so much fun. When all at once we heard a thud, there we were, better deep in mud, and we crawled out to see what we had done. We're stuck again, stuck again, having so much fun it ought to be a sin. I called, hello, Monty, I need your truck, you got that right, me and Tim are stuck, so help us, Monty, we're stuck again. It's a cinch, as much as you're stuck, you need a winch. I'm gonna get you one for your anniversary. So she bought me one of those fancy jobs, silver cable and all chrome knobs. It was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen. Then one night at 10:30, there we were, me and Tim, drinking beer and having ourselves a ball. of our dang luck. Wasn't long till we were stuck. My winch was home against the bedroom wall. Stuck again, stuck again. We're having so much fun, it ought to be a sin. I called, hello, money, I need your truck. You got that right, me and Tim are stuck, so help us, money. We're stuck again. On the front of my truck, there's no way we can get stuck. We'll just winch out from the nearest tree. Between our legs was a can of Bud. We finally got out to the mud. Tim said, man, this is the place to be. It was Teflon slick and belly deep. Out among it we did creep. And to all those watching we did astound. But it didn't take long, we couldn't budge. Tim crawled out there in the mud and hollered, Hank, there ain't no trees around. We're stuck again, stuck again. Having so much fun, it ought to be a sin. I called, hello, Monty, I need your truck. You got that right, me and Tim are stuck, so help us, Monty. We're stuck again, stuck again. Stuck again, stuck again. Help us, money. We're stuck again. We're stuck again.
Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.